Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. February is Black History Month, and we're continuing our conversation with Russell Stevenson. He's the biographer of Elijah Abels, and in this next episode, we'll talk about Abels' Canadian mission. Did you know that he had to escape from a mob? Check out our conversation. Before you do that, I just want to mention a couple of other things. Please know that all of our Black History transcripts are on sale for 25 to 30% off on our Amazon store. So that's Paul Reeve and Darren Smith. We've also got a Kindle version of Margaret Young's interview. So those are on sale. Margaret's is only $3. So please check that out. I'm sure you'll enjoy that. Also, if you'd like to advertise our business, please contact me on my website or email me at gospeltangents@gmail.com. We'd love to have you advertise here at Gospel Tangents. Now back to our conversation. We know that in my conversation with Mark Staker, 1838 was a very tumultuous year for the Mormons, especially in Kirtland with the bank failure and all that. Do we have any sense of, Elijah Abel, has any opinions or anything that he was aware of that?
No, in regards to the Kirtland Safety Society specifically, we don't have any evidence about Elijah's opinions or his views. I mean, we do know that the year following, in 1838, he serves a mission to upstate New York and Upper Canada, as it was then called. So clearly, you know, the scandal of the Kirtland Safety Society did not affect his faith to the extent that he was unwilling to serve a mission. And, you know, it's noteworthy that Elijah's friendship with Joseph Smith, I mean, it was a friendship for the ages. It was a friendship that was talked about long after both Joseph's and Elijah's death. You know, even, you know, an outside journalist could come to Utah in the 1920s and, you know, include a passage in his article and speak of how tight Joseph and Elijah were.
Oh, wow. So he was very good friends with the prophet.
Yes.
So so Joseph would have been very well aware of this ordinationist.
Oh, he signed off on it.
Okay.
On the elder certificate, his name is at the bottom. So the fact that Joseph Smith authorized it is absolutely beyond dispute.
Okay. So I know that, previous to the essay on the LDS.org talking about it, a lot of people thought that that Joseph wasn't aware or had nothing to do with that, but it sounds like he was very well aware.
Yeah, and I mean, even according to Harold B. Lee, you know, Harold B. Lee himself believed that, you know, Joseph Smith eventually had the priest revoked from Elijah, that he had kind of been duped. However, subsequent research has shown that, it's pretty clear that Elijah's racial identity was not such at that time and in that place to where anybody could miss it, right? I mean, the fact that Zebedee Coltran felt, you know, so open about his racial bigotry that he was willing to push back against Joseph Smith, I mean, that tells you that Zebedee Coltran was aware of Elijah's, you know, ethnic identity. And it's noteworthy, too, that in 1843, Joseph Smith and Orson Hyde are having a conversation, and Orson is warning Joseph. It's like, listen, if you keep saying all these nice things about people of African descent, they're going to rise up above you. If you keep giving them access to resources, freeing them from slavery, then, you know, you're going to have a real problem on your hands. And Joseph uses Elijah as an exemplary African-American person. He says, go to Cincinnati, which is where Elijah was based at the time. Go to Cincinnati and you will find an African-American man who rides in his carriage and, you know, really gives peoples of African descent a good name. So I don't want to overstate Joseph Smith's racial progressivism, because we have good evidence to suggest that as a community, as a people, Joseph was rather averse to peoples of African descent, that he saw them as a threat, he saw them as kind of a blight on society. But he also believed that on a case-by-case basis, peoples of African descent, like Elijah, could climb the social ladder and prove themselves. People like Orson and people like Zebedee were much more skeptical of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about his mission to Canada. Can you talk a little bit, what were some of his experience up there? Do we know any of his companions, anything like that?
Yeah, you know, we actually know a fair amount about his missionary efforts in upstate New York and Upper Canada, at least by comparison to the rest of his life. We do know that, as far as companions go, you know, he didn't travel two by two like many other missionaries would have. Instead, you know, he went alone, and you know, we can speculate about why Joseph Smith would have chosen upstate New York and especially Ontario as a missionary site for Elijah. And the speculation that I make is Ontario was one of the leading places, the leading hubs, if you will, for runaway slaves in all of North America. I mean, it was the northern terminus of the Underground Railroad. That was the promised land. That was where people like Elijah, who had been freed from slavery, and we presume that, that's where people wanted to make it. I mean, that was the dream. If you could make it to Ontario, then you're free. For those people who've watched Handmaid's Tale, then you have some sense of how much making it to Canada could mean to people who are living under oppressive circumstances. So we can suppose that maybe Joseph Smith saw Elijah as a kind of a link between the overwhelmingly white LDS community and the African-American community in Ontario. Additionally, they would not pose the same level of political difficulties that peoples of African descent would pose in Missouri or in the South for American Latter-day Saints, because there isn't the same kinds of racial structures in place in Canada as there was in the southern states at that time. So, we can put Elijah in that time and in that place. Whatever Joseph's reasons for assigning him to this particular mission, Elijah certainly would have come into contact with several African Americans who had run away from slavery. So that is really beyond dispute. Now, who were some of his companions? We know that he interacted with Zenas Gurley. We know that he interacted with James Blakesley, both of whom would later play a major role in forming the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We know that he played a role in ordaining another man to the priesthood, William McIntyre. That is, again, clear from very good contemporary evidence.
So this is a black man ordaining a white man to the priesthood?
Yes.
Wow, that's cool.
Yes. We know that Elijah had success in converting a woman by the name of Eunice Kinney. Eunice Kinney was a woman living in Madrid, New York. And she said, as she heard Elijah speak, even though he didn't have the same ability to read and to engage written texts as others did, she felt the Spirit so powerfully when he preached. And she wanted badly to affiliate with the saints and to become acquainted with the saints based on his testimony alone. Now, she went through her own kind of faith crisis. When her husband was unwilling to really give Elijah the time of day and to listen to the words of the LDS gospel message, Elijah promised that a curse would come upon them.
Oh, wow.
And wouldn't you know it, but their first son passed away shortly thereafter, and that humbled them. Now, there were some other rocky times over the course of the conversion, but eventually Eunice made it, and Eunice joined the LDS church. So that's one example of a preaching success story, but there are others, right? There was another one where Elijah personally stared down a mob.
Oh, wow, tell about that.
And, he eventually quieted them by saying, listen, if anyone has anything to say against me at this time, now is the time to say it. But if you don't take this opportunity, then I'm just going to preach and you no longer have the right to speak. Now, the context in which Elijah was speaking, it wasn't just a context in which you have a number of runaway slaves. There were also some political difficulties. There was a band of rebels in Upper Canada where they wanted to separate Canada from the British Commonwealth. They wanted to affiliate with the United States. And what that did was it made anyone who was an American suspect. And we have excellent evidence that Latter-day Saints found themselves facing all kinds of legal difficulty. They're being thrown in jail just for being perceived as being American, right? And Elijah would not have been able to avoid this. After all, Mormonism celebrated America. It celebrated Missouri as being the promised land, the Garden of Eden. So therefore, all Mormons came under suspicion from the royal government. And I don't think it's a coincidence that at approximately the same time, Elijah is being chased by a tar and feather mob. He runs to the home of Sarah Beckstead. And who is it that ends up defending Elijah's life? Well, it isn't the man of the house, but it's Sarah Beckstead, who comes out with a rifle in hand and opens fire on the mob. And they quickly disperse. I mean...
Oh, wow.
So Sarah Beckstead saved Elijah's life that night.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy. I'm trying to remember, but I believe that there was a charge of murder against Elijah Abel? Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's correct. There was rumors being spread that he had committed several murders, in fact. Wow. And it's likely that that played a role in his persecution as well.
Can you talk about that?
We don't have a lot of contemporary documentation speaking to that, and that's why I'm less inclined to really dive too deep into that. We know about that from Eunice Kinney's letter, and that dates to the 1890s. So, you know, looking for evidence that he was in fact charged with a murder, right? That's not out there. I am fairly confident that Eunice Kinney wasn't making that up, right? That these were actually rumors being spread. But was he in fact charged with that? That's less clear.
Huh, okay. So, yeah, wow. How long did he serve up there in Canada?
You know, ballparking it, maybe a few months.
Oh, just a few months. It was very short.
He arrived there in spring of 1838, and by, you know, fall of 1838, that's when you're seeing some of these political difficulties, you know, between those who wanted to affiliate with the United States and those who wanted to... who wanted to stay true to the British crown. I should add too that there were American agents involved in this political turmoil as well. As you see all of these wannabe Americans in Canada talking about the oppression of the British government and the oppression of the crown, well, in Epstate, New York, there was a group of vigilantes, as it were. They called themselves hunters clubs. And they began to arrange for cross-border raids where they would smuggle arms to some of these rebels. You know, they would be spreading anti-British propaganda. And Elijah began to warn people about it. He said, listen, we got to get out of here. And folks like Moses, folks like Zenas Gurley and James Blakesley, they dismissed it out of hand. They said, listen, this is alarmist. You know, he's getting carried away. He's too worried.
They thought Elijah Abel was being alarmist.
Yes. Yes. Let me backtrack on that. Let me make that a little bit more clear. So as these political difficulties really begin to ramp up, Elijah begins to warn people, saying, listen, we've got to get out of here. And James Blakesley and Zenas Gurley, they are really dismissive of Elijah's warnings. They said, listen, this is, this guy's being an alarmist. Right? He's going too far. He's clearly making a mountain out of a molehill. And as it happens, Elijah was right. And before long, Elijah, as well as everyone else, was running for their lives to try to make it to Michigan.
Oh, wow. So I'm not familiar with this little skirmish between Canada and America. Does that have like a name like that?
I mean, it's not, it would be wrong to call it a war, right? There was no major war, right?
Rebellion or something?
No. I mean, you could call it the Upper Canadian Rebellion, right? And you could call it McIntyre's Rebellion. But... really, there's no, like, it's a pretty obscure niche moment in American history.
No wonder I haven't heard of it. Okay. Because I was fascinated when I read that in your book, so I was just like, wow. So I was wondering if that's where the murder charge came in.
Possibly, right? I mean, if we could connect those dots, right? And it would not be unreasonable to connect those dots in that way. But again, that's one of those conclusions that I'm hesitant to draw just because we don't have the kind of documentation that would really merit that.
Okay, so it's not like that's why he tried to, could it be that that's why he tried to leave Canada?
Yeah, it could be, right? It could be that he was seen as an American rebel, right? And that he was collaborating with, with the Upper Canadian rebels. There are any number of things that could be. The point that I try to emphasize to people is the fact that we have all these different possibilities happening at the same time. It tells you something about the sort of political and social instability that's swirling around Elijah in 1838.
Okay.
And it really is quite distinct from the persecutions that are happening with the saints in Missouri. And I think this highlights something about the diversity of the Latter-day Saint experience throughout North America at this time, right? Not all Mormon stories are the same stories.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you have instability in Kirtland, you get instability in Jackson County, and apparently you have instability in Canada.
Right, right.
No matter where you went.
Yeah, no, you can't escape it.
Yeah, wow. So do we know what happened after that first mission to Canada? What happened with Elijah Abel?
Yes, so we have a sense of the direction he took. He escaped to Michigan, and then he eventually made his way down to Nauvoo. He faced a disciplinary council for some... for some of these issues, being an alarmist, for saying that we've got to cross the St. Lawrence River, you know, people like Zenas Gurley and others were making this complaint to Joseph Smith, but he was absolved of all charges. Right? Joseph found the whole thing to be spurious.
Oh, wow.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Russell Stevenson. In our next conversation, we'll talk about Elijah's movements back to Nauvoo, as well as Ohio, where there's a lot of interesting things going on. Did you know that Elijah helped Joseph Smith escape from a mob?
So by 1841, he is firmly located in Nauvoo. He plays a role in freeing Joseph Smith from a mob that had come from Missouri to take him and, you know, extradite him back for the charge of attempting the assassination of Lilburn W. Boggs.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.